Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. First, there was Just Say No. Then we had Just Say Yes. Now we have Just Say How. Today's guest is a recent presenter at the Spirit Plant Medicine Conference in Vancouver, BC, where she gave a talk called Just Say How, Preparation for an Epic Psychedelic Experience. Our guest is Brigitte Mars, a master herbalist, university professor, author, and nutritional consultant of natural health with some 50 years experience. She teaches herbal medicine at Naropa University and the School of Health Mastery in Iceland. She has been the faculty advisor for the Psychedelic Club at Naropa and is the voice for the audio version of the Psychedelic Prayers, based on the Tao Te Ching as translated by Timothy Leary and Dr. Ralph Metzner. She is a longtime member of MAPS and a recent graduate of the Psychedelic Sisters School in Boulder, Colorado. She's also a professional member of the American Herbalist Guild. And Brigitte is the author of many books, including The Home Reference to Holistic Health and Healing, The Country Almanac of Home Remedies, The Desktop Guide to Herbal Medicine, Beauty by Nature, Addiction Free Naturally, The Sexual Herbal Healing Herbal Teas, Rossum, and co-author of the Hemp Nut Cookbook. Her DVDs include Sacred Psychoactive, Herbal Wizardry for Kids of All Ages, Natural Remedies for Childhood Ailments, Overcoming Addictions, and Natural Remedies for Emotional Health. Her latest project is a phone app called iPlant that helps budding herbalists identify the plants in the wild. Hello, Brigitte, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
It's my pleasure and honor, Paulo. Thank you.
Now, you and I actually met at the Sacred Plant Medicine Conference in Vancouver, where you were a speaker. And this is one of the annual events of what's now being referred to as the Psychedelic Renaissance. What does this phrase mean?
This is a wonderful time because, you know, there's research going on at many universities around the country. Certainly, Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, has gotten a lot of people to rethink these things. And of course, there's people like us who have long been believers. But I don't think there's ever been any type of education about how to use these things in a safe way. So when we talk about Just Say How, you know, we also need to realize that these things are powerful medicines, and if used in the wrong way, in the wrong set and setting, could be damaging, could be hurtful, frightening, and we certainly don't want that. That's not going to help this cause, because there's the potential for it to be so helpful to people if used in a conscious, safe way.
And how did you get involved in this stage of the movement?
Well, I think the first time I heard about beatniks, I thought, oh, that sounds great. But certainly seeing Life magazine and the stories about the hippies, that this was an opportunity for creativity, for community, for a living life as art, and living life as theater. But I was always interested. Of course, I'm a child of the 60s. I was born in 52, so I grew up in that era. I was a little bit young, but it just sounded like the right thing to do. And of course, even as a youth, I was concerned about issues like the Vietnam War and racism and environmental destruction, things that were going on that, you know, I was aware of. So when I was 18 years old, 19 years old, I found myself living in a house with Rosemary Leary, Timothy Leary's wife, when she was in exile after having helped Timothy escape from prison. And she came to live with us in Canada. So I learned from her. I considered her to be a high priestess, and she taught me a lot about creating safe set and ceremony. And she was really epic. She is now passed on. She's my daughter Sunflower's godmother. But I felt that I was really in the presence of a very evolved being, and she was a great teacher, and I was honored to be in touch with her all the years that she was on the lam.
Well, you know, I can speak for myself, and in thinking back to, you know, the early 70s and doing a lot of psychedelics, we didn't have sitters, and we didn't have all of these concerns about how to do it safely. Why is there such a need for this emphasis on safety now, when millions of people were taking mega doses of LSD and other psychedelics back in the day?
Well, you know, I think that there's always going to be this element of people wanting to use these medicines to go to a concert, to enjoy a party, for example. But I think that when we don't have the time for stillness and contemplation, we can miss out on the opportunity for healing body, mind, and spirit. And so I learned that these are very powerful substances. And I know that people want to use them at concerts, but then you are really subject to crowds, to losing your friends, not being able to find your car, losing your keys. I mean, and you're not going to get a deep personal healing experience. You might have a group thing, but it all ends up becoming about, you know, the Spangl or the Grateful Dead or whatever concert. And I think that if to really use these medicines for what I see is a great healing potential, but you need to give yourself time for quiet, not to just be carried by the music, but to go deep, maybe to not have so many words in the music, to lay there with iPads on, or to be contemplative in nature, to be meditative, to practice yoga. And I think that in the psychedelic experience, things can become very magnified. We can become very sensitive to things like energy or hostility or even some of the more sinister innuendos of the music. And so the idea that if we're going to use this as an evolutionary tool, it's important to have some quiet and some time for contemplation. And, you know, things like, you know, getting in a car and driving to the next city and losing your friends. I mean, all of that can make for a difficult experience. But even if it is just a fun concert, I wouldn't count on the deep healing that could come from using it where you're able to go deep inside.
Right. I know some of the best trips I ever had were out in nature all by myself. I didn't have a sitter. I wonder if there would have been a big advantage to having one. I got a lot out of it on a spiritual level, but I may have gotten more if I had somebody holding my hand or something. I don't know.
Well, I don't think that everybody needs a sitter all the time, but certainly in the beginning or for people wanting to use a large amount. But for example, getting to nature might require driving, something right. That the tripper should not be doing. A sitter might also be the one to say, you know, no, you're not going to take your clothes off at the park, even though, you know, nature and nudity are a wonderful thing. But the sitter's going to say that could really cause trouble that lasts much longer than the adventure. A sitter might, you know, give you ideas like writing things down that you say. Maybe there's some profundity that comes through you that you verbalize, but you want to remember this. And a sitter can also help you integrate the experience and help you reflect about what happened. So I certainly don't think everybody needs a sitter all the time, but I think when people are first starting out, or if they're doing a large dose, that maybe somebody who's there to hand you a tissue or help you walk to the bathroom or just feel safe that you are protected. For example, you know, not setting the house on fire because you weren't careful with the candles, or not letting the bathtub run over while you were looking for a CD. So a sitter can help prevent problems.
So okay. So yeah, and it's top of mind these days because there's this movement afoot, this psychedelic renaissance, that is promoting the use of psychedelics for different kinds of mental health issues like anxiety or depression, as antidotal for that, like psilocybin or ayahuasca or iboga, and that's bringing government into the field. And at the conference, Jamie Wheel voiced some concerns about the psychedelic conference, and I understand that you largely agree with some of the main points he made. And what would those be?
I'm not sure which points they were, so maybe you need to refresh my memory.
Okay, I think it had to do with the medical establishment getting involved, big pharma taking over natural herbal medicines.
Oh, okay, I remember all that. So he was a great speaker, by the way. So, you know, I like to feel that natural medicine, herbs are medicine for the people. I feel very comfortable using things that have been used by millions of people for thousands of years. I think there's a little, definitely a lot less tradition when we talk about things that are synthesized in a laboratory. So just because a substance is available doesn't mean it's the right time to do it. A purity of a substance is really important. Sometimes people buy things at concerts or festivals and, you know, they don't really know what it is. So I think those are really important issues. Yes, Big Pharma wants to get involved in everything now that they have, you know, kind of downplayed the importance of herbal medicine, but we're seeing things like turmeric and saw palmetto berry and oil of oregano also being really big players. And I mean, I want to see this be available to people, and I don't want to make it us or them, but I feel very connected that these are substances that do have a long tradition of use. And if people want to research it, you know, that's fine. But the same way I feel about herbal medicine, you know, maybe someone needs a study that, you know, garlic can lower high blood pressure. But I can say that, you know, my grandmother was saying that 100 years ago and she was right. So if you need a study and that makes you feel better, great. But I'm also trusting in the wisdom of human experience.
And you're very in tune with the spiritual aspect of psychedelic use, as you were bringing up earlier. How would you describe the spiritual side of an immersive psychedelic experience like psilocybin? What makes it spiritual?
Well, I think that the ability to see things that are often not seen with the naked eye might awaken people to the possibility that there's more than just this material realm. To be aware of the, you know, the grid. Very often people see lines of energy. Very often people might observe the amount of colors and rainbows that are in a drop of water. They're always there, but maybe we're just seeing them for the first time. So I think there's the possibility of it being awakened. But I also think that very often psychedelics can amplify what's already going on for somebody. And if someone is, you know, a staunch non-believer in something spiritual, you know, it may or may not awaken that. But I've also seen it awaken people to having less fear of death or belief that there's more than just this life. I think that things like telepathy and, you know, being able to observe health issues, or even just seeing the power of flowers. I know for me, you know, being an observation of nature and being able to taste a plant and feel in my body where it affected me. And then later on to be able to go look that up and say, wow, I was able to attune to that. But as far as spiritual realms, I think some people have had, you know, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth or thoughts in anyone's head, but I think that people have been able to face death or to have less, you know, feeling that this is the final step. So yeah, that things are maybe more infinite than they seem.
And there seems to be an impact on what we call the ego. And I'm wondering, what's your take on the relationship between the ego and the psychedelic experience?
Well, you know, as a psychedelic sitter, I often have people say that their intention is to have ego dissolution, that they want to just, you know, melt into the universe and all that. And, you know, sometimes that seems to happen for people. And that can also be a little bit like surrendering into life after death, that you just kind of surrender. We do know that, you know, the chemical dimethyltryptamine, which is present in psilocybin and ayahuasca, is also present when we die, and as well as when we give birth and when we are born. So there are some things that come into play that show us that there's more than our everyday life. We have a break from that constant serotonin, which helps us to be responsible and do our job and get to work on time. So it just seems to expand consciousness and possibilities. And, you know, if ego dissolution, you know, is a goal, that may happen, and you may find out that, you know, maybe holding on to some parts of your ego are necessary for your survival, but you might also find feeling more compassion and seeing the goodness in people, the necessity of protecting nature and being stewards of the earth. So I have great hopes that the psychedelic experience is going to raise people's awareness of how we are all connected and how we need to do our best to make the world a better place.
Right. That seems to speak to the whole concept of ego dissolution for me. I mean, I think that, well, my experience has been give me a big enough dose and my ego is going to dissolve and I better not have anything to do and I better not have to answer the door or take care of business, all the normal things that I rely on my ego for when I'm going to have that type of experience. So I'm with you, and I'm very interested in this whole thing about psychedelic sitters, and I'm very happy to hear about this school in Boulder, which you're a graduate of, because it seems to me with Michael Pollan's book and with all these conferences now and people awareness being raised, that there's a real need for that kind of service and that there's a terrible shortage of people that can that are really qualified to do that. What constitutes a qualification, and what did you learn in that school?
Well, Daniel McQueen is the founder of the school, and Daniel McQueen is a graduate of Naropa University, where I teach. And him and his wonderful wife, Allison, have been working with this medicine. And so I really didn't know what to expect. But what I learned is that one can actually go very, very deep with cannabis. And I know that that sounds like, well, wow, you know, I've been smoking weed for years. What's cannabis going to do? And I've been really amazed to learn that, first of all, cannabis is legal in our state and in many states, that when used in a sacred set and setting with prayer, with intention, with laying down and having someone else taking care of music that has very few or no words, where you're laying down with iPads on, you can go really, really deep. And I'm surprised, but I've been able to go as deep as a, you know, ayahuasca journey, a psilocybin journey, a DMT journey. And in 3 hours, you're good to go. You have some time for integration. So, you know, certainly what you learn in psychedelic sitter school can be applied to other medicines as well. But you learn about keeping the space safe, what to do if someone, you know, has anxiety, how that another nice thing about cannabis is you can add more gradually if you need to. Rather than, you know, taking a big dose of something and finding out 2 hours later that it was too much or too little. So, you know, all of that's really wonderful. So we learn how to hold safe space and how to help people integrate, get them to have a snack before they're ready to, you know, go back and meet the world or drive home. And, you know, I was surprised because my first practice client after being a graduate of the school was a Rastafarian. And I thought, oh, right, like cannabis is going to do something to him. This is someone who, you know, smokes a lot. And at the end of it, he said, I had no idea we could go this deep with cannabis. And so we keep learning more and more advantages of this amazing plant that we can do. And I would say add to the list the possibility of doing deep healing work, setting intention, going inside, getting insight about steps in life. It can really be profound. And really generally safe, because no one has, you know, really harmed themselves or you know, died from using cannabis.
So what do you tell people on if they ask you, well, I want to have an epic experience, you know, I want to have a life-changing experience. How can I get the most out of taking psychedelics?
Well, I usually ask people before I meet with someone, or before I have a ceremony with someone, we usually have a meeting, and I encourage them to have an intention. What is it you want to work on? And to keep coming back to your intention during the experience. I encourage people to bring a journal with them because they may have ideas of things that they want to work on. Maybe they're saying, like, I really need to get in touch with my mother. I really felt her, you know, not during the ceremony, but maybe you want to call her in the next few days. So writing something down can be very powerful. And I encourage people to have some time off the day after to integrate and think about what happened. If you have to just go right back to work or jump right back into your day-to-day routine, you may find that a lot of it just kind of flies away. So the idea of having someone you can talk to, I think, can help root the experience so that it has lasting value. And that's what we're going for. I know there's so many ways that people can party and have a good time, but I'm here to help uplift evolution. And I think that our planet planet really needs wise people that are going to make a positive change. And my hopes are really great for this. And that's why I think that we want to do this right. We don't want to be careless with this. We don't want to have people jumping out of windows and doing stupid things and, you know, driving under the influence. We want people to take this as a serious medicine and do a good thing with it, so that the research can continue.
Now, how do you, as a sitter or as anybody, how do you create a safe environment conducive to the deep exploration of the psyche? You talked about set and setting, and Timothy Leary and Ram Dass used to always bring that up.
Well, some of the things that I learned from Rosemary is like really creating a place that's safe, that's beautiful, that there's something to engage all the senses. So maybe you have beautiful art books. Maybe you have essential oils to smell. I often have people lay down on a bio mat, which is an amethyst crystal mat that warms up, which is really nice, and you can adjust the temperature so people feel really warm and comfortable laying there with a blanket. I'm a big believer in having iPads for at least part of the ceremony, so you're not just like tripping out on leaves or, you know, art. You want to go deep within, so you're having your own journey. And, you know, and then to, so something for all the senses, maybe something wonderful to taste at some part. I also think that, you know, setting your intention and saying it out loud helps it to be so. So when you say, I'm really wanting to work on healing myself, I'm really wanting to figure out what's my next step in life. So as you're journeying in, you know, the psychedelic realm, you know, calling yourself back to why are you doing this? And then at the end of it, to integrate, did any of those quests come through for you?
You know, one of your CDs is Psychedelic Prayers, which has a connection with Timothy Leary. How do people use those?
Well, the psychedelic prayers are based on the Tao Te Ching. And in the 60s, Timothy and Dr. Ralph Metzner went to India with maybe 8 versions of the Tao Te Ching, which is a book written by Lao Tzu, supposedly in the 6th century BC. And it's very wise about going with the flow and the Tao is everywhere and, you know, being at peace and non-attachment. It has a lot of great words of wisdom. All Things Must Pass was a Beatles song that was one of the psychedelic prayers. And so for some reason, the psychedelic prayers were designed to be read during the psychedelic experience. And when I lived with Rosemary Leary and a number of people from the Brotherhood of Eternal Love, most people weren't able to read. The letters would like swim all over the pages. But I don't know, maybe because I went to an all-girls boarding school, I was the one who always read them. So years later, Timothy gave me permission before he left the planet to, you know, continue the prayers. And so with some wonderful music and musicians, I read the prayers. So now all you need to do is put the CD in and you can get the psychedelic prayers on my website.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have it. I bought it at the conference and it's really cool. I really enjoy it. And I'm a big fan of the Tao Te Ching to begin with. So where do you see this psychedelic renaissance heading? These are exciting times. I mean, stuff is changing.
You know, I'm hoping that it enables people to get some wisdom, to learn more about how to take care of their bodies, how to unplug from, you know, simply relying on pharmaceutical drugs to deal with mental issues. You know, I think a lot of people are diagnosed with mental health issues because they, you know, maybe have food allergies or heavy metal toxicity or inflammation in their brain, which allergies can do. So I'm hopeful that this can play a part in enhancing creativity. And, you know, sometimes I like to joke that, you know, a lot of the inspiration during the psychedelic era of the 60s, you know, brought about great music, great creativity. I know for a lot of people, they're just now getting that, hey, we need to recycle and not pollute the ocean and eat lower on the food chain. But I think a lot of us were inspired, you know, 50 years ago to do these things. And I'm glad people are catching up, but this is old news to those of us who are, you know, been in the psychedelic realm. It made sense to think about what you put in your body and what you put into your consciousness when it comes to music and art and literature.
Yeah, it's beautiful when you think about it. You know, Nixon declared the war on drugs and classified psychedelics as the most serious type of narcotic, and then all research was shut down. And it's really exciting that it can come back now without the hysteria about it, without, you know, the culture war aspect being behind everything. So I want to ask you, is there any particular research that you'd like to see around psychedelics?
You know, I really do think that if people have an intention of doing some healing work on their body or going deep within and, you know, asking themselves, I want to know why I have this health issue. I want to know why I have arthritis or allergies. I think that there's a way of actually going inside and traveling inside our body and getting insight about, oh, I need to eat more salad or I need to get off sugar. I certainly hear from people that they're able to access information. You know, I've had people say, I had an ayahuasca vision and it told me take vitamin C and, you know, stop eating red meat or something, or stop eating sugar, or get off coffee. So all these things are possible, and I would love everyone to be happy, healthy, holy, and free.
Well, thank you, Brigitte. There's so much more we could explore, but we've run out of time. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is www.brigittemars.com. That's BRIGITTE Mars.com. And I know there's so much there. In the intro, we've talked about all the things you've done and all the things you've written and produced. It's a beautiful body of work, and people can find it at BrigitteMars.com. And thanks again, Brigitte, for being with us.
Peace and love to you. Blessings.
And for those who tuned into the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of the new book, Intuitive Intelligence, which shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with Brigitte Mars, an herbalist, author, and nutritional consultant, as well as one of the leading lights in the psychedelic renaissance. And I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm. Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific time. Podcasts of the show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcasts. Thanks again to Brigitte Mars and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.